Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Denisa Casey, reading the Lifestyle section of the Midland Reporter Telegram for Monday, May 16th, 2022. Friendship evaporates amidst shoplifting and shortchanging. Dear Abby, I had a friend I adored. She was someone I had known for over 20 years, but I had to say goodbye to her. I realized she is a shoplifter and also doesn't tip at restaurants. When she shoplifted, I was with her. I had no idea she was doing it until we got back to the car and one of the items fell out of her bag. I was appalled. I told her to never do it again when we were together, and I have tried not to shop with her since. I realized she wasn't leaving tips when her receipt blew away with a gust of wind. She was in the restroom when I picked it up and saw there was no tip for the server, who was working very hard. I told her I didn't feel comfortable going places with her under these circumstances, especially with how things have changed during COVID. The last straw was when I caught her trying to sneak into a musical event. There are musicians in my family, and I know how they and others have struggled during these hard times. She has more than enough money to cover these costs. I don't understand why she does it. The problem is, I feel guilty. Should I reach out and suggest we do things that don't involve music, restaurants, or shopping? Maybe we can just go for walks and talk. I miss her friendship. Taken Aback in California. Dear Taken Aback, I don't advise it. The woman you miss, I hesitate to refer her as your friend, is selfish, stingy, dishonest, self-centered, and lacks compassion for others. You need her in your life like a moose needs a hat rack. Find walking companions who are caring, generous, and honest, with whom to get your steps in. Dear Abby, my younger brother is in his 60s. As a child, he was very active and athletic. Decades later, he is seriously overweight and having trouble with his knees, plus numerous other physical problems. He's addicted to painkillers and takes many other drugs. Over the last 10 years, he has had disagreements with at least 10 people and written mean and spiteful text. Because of it, he has lost many friends and even his doctor. He didn't communicate with me unless he wanted my opinion about something he had done or said. If I disagreed, he sent me hateful, upsetting text as well. Last year, he asked my opinion about something, and when I disagreed with him, he blasted me again. He also doesn't like my husband or stepdaughter and mentioned them in his text. I finally decided I had had enough and quit engaging him. Am I overreacting? Second Thoughts in Georgia. Dear Second Thoughts, I don't think so, because you want to avoid the pain of interacting with your dysfunctional sibling. Your solution is both logical and appropriate. Please do not second-guess or punish yourself for protecting yourself. Highest inflation in America punishes Midland's residents' businesses. Struggles show difficulty Fed faces of dousing prices with blunt tool of monetary policy. Hang out long enough in the city with the highest inflation in the U.S., and you'll quickly understand why the Federal Reserve faces a Herculean task taming prices. Midland is strung between El Paso and Dallas along Interstate 20 and more than 4 hours' drive from either big city. Its far-flung location makes everything costlier and harder to get, including workers and vehicles, which you need to go anywhere in the spread-out region with limited public transportation. Add to that the local economy's reliance on oil, and you get the unenviable number one spot for inflation over the past year. Listen to this story. Menus at local restaurants have sticky notes telling diners that prices have been raised. A gallon of milk has surged to about $6 at local gas stations, often the closest option for basics. And each Wednesday, a growing line of hundreds of cars forms outside the area's largest food bank. Inflation in Midland has hovered near 10% for the past 6 months, more than any of about 400 metropolitan areas tracked by Moody's Analytics, and well above the national average. During the period, the West Texas oil industry hub has had it even worse than big city hotspots such as Atlanta and Phoenix. U.S. consumer prices rose an annual 8.3% in April, according to government data released Wednesday, a deceleration from 8.5% in March, which economists say was probably the peak. But more economic pain is on the way in remote towns in southern and midwestern states that have seen labor pools shrink during the COVID-19 pandemic. As the Fed embarks on an interest rate hiking cycle to tamp down on decades-high inflation, Midland's struggles show how difficult it'll be to douse prices with the blunt tool of monetary policy. The central bank raised interest rates by 0.5 percentage point last week, the most since 2000, and signaled it would keep that pace in the next couple of months. Low borrowing cost helped fuel the latest surge in prices, but raising them now won't necessarily help in places like Midland. Many of the factors pushing up cost here will take months, if not years, to untangle. And key drivers of inflation are out of policymakers' hands. The war in Ukraine, logistics issues, and lockdowns in China that have ripple effects on global supply chains. They're also out of the hands of local politicians in the heavily Republican voting area. If anything, inflation has only deepened sentiment against President Joe Biden. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, up for re-election in November, decries Biden for high prices, while Democrats say Abbott's own crackdown at the border has delayed goods and pushed up cost. On the ground, the implications are very real for Bo Garrison, owner of Permian Dirt Works, LLC. He and his 20 workers use about 24 trucks, excavators, and bulldozers to dig, flatten, and haul several tons of caliche rock and earth each day, creating roads and level extraction sites called pads for energy companies. A few weeks ago, over enchiladas at a Mexican restaurant in town, a Caterpillar Incorporated salesperson gave Garrison some bad news. There were no more bulldozers available. Shortly after that, his primary car dealer told him something previously unthinkable. There were no new Ford F-250s available in Midland until at least 2023. Garrison's company will have to pay more for repairs and rentals and try to pass on the cost, and in some cases may have to pass on some contracts. Other expenses are piling up, including wages, which he raised up to 20% in the past year, and $650 a day for employees' fuel, nearly double the amount just a few months ago. Now I gotta cross my fingers and pray that my mechanics are taking care of the equipment, because if they break, that's it. Garrison, 43, said shortly after dawn on a recent Friday, standing in the dirt and sand of a pad that used to be a cotton field. It's one of the hundreds his company created over the past decade in the region, which Garrison travels some 200 miles daily. The recent increase in energy prices is kindling activity in the oil fields, which is good for the local economy, but that adds pressure on inflation as consumers and businesses wrangle for the same goods. At Christmas in Action, a nonprofit that repairs homes for primarily elderly owners, water heaters have doubled in price in the past year, along with lumber and siding. The group had to dig into reserves for the first time in its 50-year history, said Nathan Knowles, director of operations. When prices make a big jump like this, they just don't come back down, Knowles said. Meanwhile, demand is only picking up as more homeowners call with a caved-in roof or rotted wall and simply don't have the cash for repairs. Signs of future inflation are evident in the service sector, too. Medical Center Health System, the largest health care provider in the region, currently has about 100 nurse positions open. Two people have applied. That means hiring more contract nurses, whose agencies charge $280 an hour, about eight times what a local nurse makes. Prices for protective equipment have also surged. So far, Medical Center Health System has held off on raising procedure prices and relied on telehealth and bulk ordering to keep costs low. Come October, the provider will ask insurers to reimburse more for procedures, said President Russell Tippin. Patients are already seeing higher premiums and copays. Tippin, who was named into his role just before the pandemic, is used to the boom-bust nature of a city reliant on the energy industry. This is different. The only thing I know is that it will go up, and if it goes up, it'll come down. But this is the first time I've doubted that, he said. West Texas is experiencing double inflation, oil inflation, and then the inflation of gas and milk and everything else. The soaring cost of basic goods have brought more people each Wednesday to the West Texas Food Bank in Odessa, Midland's sister city, about 20 minutes away along Interstate 20. Since January, the line of cars snaking outside the three-story warehouse facility has grown longer. The count from one April afternoon, 420, the most since the worst of the COVID crisis in 2020. Jesus and Nativia Zapata were in that line, their van's gas meter flashing empty and still a 30-minute wait for volunteers handing out boxes filled with watermelon, bread, and canned vegetables. The only food I can buy at the grocery store anymore is eggs and beans, said Jesus, 74, who retired 5 years ago. The couple receives about $2,000 a month in pension and benefits, but only in the past few months have costs driven them to the food bank. Behind them in line was Eduardo Gama, 47. His sedan windows rolled down for his three big dogs. Rent and electricity prices shot up so much in Midland that a few months ago he moved to an RV park in Odessa. His monthly bills are down $200, but wages from his job at a storage facility haven't kept pace with inflation. With the cost of living out here and inflation, people just aren't able to keep up, said Libby Campbell, chief executive officer of the West Texas Food Bank. She has seen an increase in people seeking food who are employed, underscoring how inflation has eaten into wages. While donors have been generous, Campbell worries the spike in fertilizer prices as a result of the war in Ukraine could prompt a food shortage in the U.S. come fall. It cost more to get food out here already, and that would compound the issue. The unemployment rate in Midland at about 3.5% is lower than the annual average over the past decade as the oil fields are picking up. But related service sector jobs are slower to return. Melinda Hernandez, 52, lost her administrative assistant job at an energy services company in March. She's been delivering pizzas at night for $10 an hour and staffing a funeral home when they call her. She's still making only about half her previous wage. So far, she's had no luck finding a better paid job. I don't want to fail my son, and it's my fear, Hernandez, a single mother, said from the two-bedroom house she rents with her 19-year-old son in southern Midland, just off a rural road. She worried she won't be able to afford the kind of high school graduation party for him that she gave her older son a few years ago, a big affair for her Hispanic family. Inflation isn't such a concern for booming pockets of the local economy. At the legendary Barn Door Steakhouse in Odessa, owner Ray Gillian said the most expensive item on the menu remains one of the most popular, the $62 3-pound tomahawk steak. He raised the price several times and says it should be priced closer to $70. Most items on his menus have gone up since they were printed just a few weeks ago, so he's added a sticky note telling diners to add $2 onto the listed entree prices. But the 180-seat restaurant still fills up every night with families and couples, and it turned its first pandemic-era profit in December. Back in the oil fields, Garrison stood in front of an old rig that rhythmically dipped its beak into the ground. He put down roots in the community a decade ago, but now contemplates an existential question brought on by inflation. Does he want to stay in a place where it's getting so hard to raise a family? How much cash do I keep putting in without knowing what will happen in the end? Garrison asked. Concert to celebrate life of former MOSC director is Tuesday. Renowned conductor Thomas Hostat's memorial concert, Final Bow, will be open to the public at 7 p.m. Tuesday in the Ray Great House Recital Hall at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. The program has been written and arranged by his son, Lowell, a Juilliard-trained violinist and longtime music director at Odessa Christian Faith Center. It will feature the Lone Star Brass Quintet of the Midland Odessa Symphony, the visiting Cassatt String Quartet, and the UTPB Strings. Soloist will be the UTPB senior soprano, Crystal Jacques. As a labor of love, Lowell is opening the program with taps, followed by his composition, Brass Quintet Movement 1. The Lone Star Brass will then perform his arrangement of A Mighty Fortress. Jennifer Leschnauer, formerly of Odessa and a violin classmate of Lowell's, will participate with New York-based Cassatt Strings as they perform two of the younger Hostat's arrangements of classic hymns, How Great Thou Art and Great is Thy Faithfulness. A favorite poem penned by Hostat's paternal grandmother, Annie Dowd Wade, has been set to music by Lowell. I Want My Flowers Now tells of the desire to enjoy praise during life rather than after death, and will be sung by Jacques with piano accompanist Sherry Santarelli. For the finale, the UTPB Strings will play with Cassatt and Lone Star Brass. Among the selections will be Dance from Southwest Suite, a piece composed by Lowell and commissioned by Cassatt in the Basin in 2019. Two of the four members of Lowell's family, wife Kathy playing viola and daughter Sarah Joy Holder on cello, will be among the musicians. In addition, favorite alumni like Jennifer Acosta, violinist and orchestra teacher at Alamo Junior High School, will perform. Jonathan Hostat will speak along with his father. Lowell explained that musical compositions were often exchanged during gift-giving occasions in the Hostat family. Also, it was not unusual to have all of the family participate. Lowell recalled a performance of The Nutcracker when he was a teen. Hostat directed him as first violin with the symphony, while his sister Leslie, a ballet student, performed the role of Clara, and their mother, Muriel, assisted backstage. He also recalled how honored he was to visit European countries and perform when his father was invited to conduct overseas. That really shaped my perspective of life, he said. Hostat rose from touring on the trumpet beginning at age 15 to earning a performance certificate from the Eastman School of Music, a Fulbright scholarship to the Vienna Academy for Music, and to various conducting and teaching positions around the country. For 28 years, he brought his distinctive baton to orchestras at the Eastman School, the Honolulu Amarillo, and Midland-Odessa symphonies. In the Permian Basin, he revitalized the symphony from his laundry room office in Odessa, while rehearsals were held in an old hangar with a hole in the roof. By developing agreements for music education at ECISD and MISD, Hostat was able to attract and retain quality musicians like Karen McAfee. But he was also so much more than a conductor. He contributed to the Film Music Society's quarterly journal, Cue Sheet. He added courses like the history of film music to the UT Permian Basin curriculum. He brought virtual reality classes to the university and recorded Music of the Symphonic Southwest and John David Ernest, the Permian Symphony, with the Midland-Odessa Symphony. Hostat embodied the showmanship from his mother's boisterous Irish roots to the scholarly professionalism of his German father, an early faculty member at the Oklahoma State University. Before he died on January 3rd, one of his final wishes was to have his family, friends, and musician colleagues gather for a concert rather than a funeral. Hello, this is Denise Casey, reading the obituaries from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, May 14th, 2022. Fletcher Holmes Mills, Jr. Fletcher Holmes Mills, Jr., 88, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, May 10th, 2022. A private family gravesite was held at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Fletcher was born September 28th, 1933, to Ruth and Fletcher Mills, Sr. in San Angelo, Texas. He married Laverne on May 30th, 1959. He is survived by his four children, Daphne Childs, Denise Mills, Dana Bella, Kenneth D., and Fred Mills, grandsons Jason Childs and T.J. Bella. He is preceded in death by his wife, Laverne Mills, and brother, Joel Mills. Ascension Gonzalez, Jr., August 14th, 1960 through May 12th, 2022. Ascension Lerma Gonzalez, 61, of Midland, Texas, passed away Thursday, May 12th, of 2022. Jr. was born in Big Spring, Texas, to Beatrice and Ascension Sr. He married the love of his life, Penny Sue Sanchez, on September 3rd, 1985. Junior leaves behind his wife of 36 years, Penny. Wherever Penny was is where Junior wanted to be, and it was very seldom they were apart. When he got to playing his music, he dedicated his favorite love songs to her. Junior was the most loving father to his beloved daughter, Jessica Gonzalez, and his adored son, Ascension Lee Gonzalez III. And daughter-in-law, Jasmine Gonzalez. Junior was the oldest of eight and will be greatly missed by his siblings, Belinda Gonzalez, John Paul Gonzalez, and spouse Sonia, Jesse Gonzalez and spouse Virginia, Patricia Gonzalez, Juanita Gonzalez, and spouse Guerrero, and numerous nieces, nephews, cousins, and friends. Benjamin Curtis Mahaney. On April 30th, 2022, Benjamin Curtis Mahaney peacefully left the confines of Earth at his home, surrounded by friends and family. Curtis was born on February 21st, 1933, in Electra, Texas, as the second of three children born to Bert Mahaney and Lenoa Geraldine Mahaney. Curtis was preceded in death by his parents, sisters, uncles, and aunts. He is survived by wife Melva Mahaney of Robert Lee, Texas, son Curtis Lee Mahaney of Robert Lee, daughter Donna K. Paul, Greg, of Robert Lee, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that you consider a donation to your favorite charity in his name. More importantly, remember Curtis and the family in your thoughts and prayers, and have a big belly laugh in his honor. Darla B. Schwartz. Darla B. Schwartz, 86, of Odessa, Texas, passed away May 8, 2022, at the Cottages of Chapel Creek in Frisco, Texas. Darla was the owner of Dinette Designs at Barstools on Midkiff Road in Midland, Texas, for 35 years. Darla was born December 28, 1935, to Daddy Pete Hext and wife Granny Jack Hext of Alton, Texas. She is survived by son Rex Randall Henderson, Melinda of Midland, Texas, and daughter LaDawn Dean Mark of Dallas, Texas. Three grandchildren, James R. Henderson, Christy of Parker, Colorado, Dustin S. Henderson, Taylor of Odessa, Texas, and Angela Valiant, Jason of Odessa. 10 great-grandchildren, brother Jimmy Jack Hext, Linda of Lubbock, Texas, and sister Jerry Powell, Pat of Odessa, Texas. Her special niece, Gail Morton, Harry of Arkansas, and other special nieces and nephews. Darla was preceded in death by her sister and best friend, Moonyeen Claire Bennett, and younger sister, Joanne. John Thomas Strachan. John Thomas Strachan, 86, of Midland, Texas, passed away April 27, 2022, after a brief illness. Born September 1, 1935, to Frazier and Cecilia Strachan in Chicago, Illinois. John was preceded in death by his parents, Frazier and Cecilia Strachan, and his younger brother, Bobby Strachan. He is survived by his brother, William F. Bill, Stephanie Strachan of Baraboo, Wisconsin, nephews Tom and Linda Strachan of Baraboo, Wisconsin, nephew Jim and Tara Strachan of St. Charles, Illinois, niece Jeannie, Jeff Thumiller of Colgate, Wisconsin, 9 great nieces and nephews. Pearlie B. Johnson. Pearlie B. Johnson was born December 26, 1925, in Falls County, Texas, to the late Isaac and Gertrude Woods. On December 13, 1944, she was united in holy matrimony to Auntie Johnson Sr., wherein they had 3 children, Mary Johnson Warren, Wanda Johnson Butler, and the late Auntie Johnson Jr. Called by many names, Mother, Grandmama, Aunt Ike, Aunt Pearlie B., Mother Johnson, departed this life at 10:40 a.m. May 10, 2022, and moved on from this earthly walk and united with her parents, Gertrude and Isaac, siblings Eldridge Woods, Eddie Woods, Mary Weatherspoon, Darnell Wallace, and Charlie Smith. Also, grandson Ellis Dumpling Warren III, whom all preceded her in death. She leaves to cherish her memories 2 daughters, Mary Ellen Ellis of Midland, Texas, and Wanda Butler of Austin, Texas. 1 sister, Clarice Coleman Watts of Pasadena, Maryland, and 1 sister-in-law, Willie Mae Robinson of Little Rock, Arkansas. She also leaves behind 6 grandchildren and a host of great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, cousins, other family, and friends. Rent hikes behind norms. Midland's yearly rent increase is lower than rest of state, nation. Apartment rents in Midland are still among the lowest in state, according to apartmentlist.com. The online apartment locator reported in its May national rent report that the average rent for a one-bedroom apartment was $724, and the average rent for a two-bedroom was $907. Apartment List also showed a monthly increase of 1.8% and yearly increase of 9.3%. Midland and Odessa still showed two of the lowest percentage decreases in the nation for rent declines since March 2020, the start of the COVID pandemic. Midland's rent decrease was 21.6%. Odessa's was 23.2%. The area with the largest drop appears to be Williston, North Dakota, minus 24.5%. The average two-bedroom rent there was $757. Odessa posted the lowest two-bedroom rent in the region and state, according to Apartment List, at $764. Other two-bedroom rents across West Texas included $964 in Abilene, $972 in Lubbock, $1,000 in Amarillo, and $1,062 in San Angelo. All the cities showed year-over-year increases from 6.3% in Lubbock to 15.8% in Amarillo. Across the state, rent increases from March 2020 were the highest, percentage-wise, along the I-35 corridor from the Metroplex and areas like McKinney, 29.3%, and Coppell, 31.3%, down to the Waco-Killeen-Temple area, where rents have spiked by as much as 35%, and as far south as Round Rock, 30.7%. Two-bedroom rents in larger cities across Texas included $1,771 in Austin, $1,397 in Dallas, $1,299 in Fort Worth, $1,287 in San Antonio, and $1,272 in Houston. The average rent of a two-bedroom in Frisco reached $2,077. Yearly rent increases in Midland, compared to April 2021, still trail the largest metropolitan areas and the average increase across the nation, 16.3%. Law, order, community at odds. Police Association DA trade comments about grand jury case about MCS officials. The aftermath of the grand jury decision to not indict five Midland Christian officials continued Friday. The police association that represents Midland's police officers and the Midland County District Attorney's Office traded statements, putting at odds the law and order community of Midland. The back and forth started when the Midland Municipal Police Officers Association decided Friday to weigh in on the grand jury's decision earlier in the week to not indict the five MCS officials on charges of failure to report with intent to conceal neglect or abuse. By its own admission, the association's decision to comment on the outcome of a case is rare, and part of the statement was directed at the Midland County District Attorney's Office and its handling of the case. MMPOA does advocate for a relentless pursuit of truth, for sound investigations, and for fair and trustworthy processes, the statement says. To that end, MMPOA has serious concerns about the grand jury process as it was handled by the Midland County District Attorney's Office in this case. Specifically, the Midland Municipal Police Officers Association was critical that prosecutors did not have the lead detective from the Midland Police Department testify before the grand jury. Such testimonies are commonplace, especially in sensitive, complex, or high-profile cases. Not having the lead detective appear before the grand jury to present the case and answer questions from the grand jury does a disservice to all parties by potentially limiting the grand jury's ability to make a full and fair determination of probable cause. The statement said, Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodolf responded Friday evening, stating that while a detective may be called as a witness in a case, it is not common practice unless there appears that there is a particular need for their testimony. However, even if a prosecutor does not call a witness to testify, the grand jury can still ask that a summons be issued for a witness, including a detective, to appear and answer any questions the grand jury may have. Nodolf wrote, If this happens, then the Midland County District Attorney's Office does everything it can to ensure that the grand jury has all the facts and evidence they need in order for them to deliberate and vote on a case. The arrest of the Midland Christian officials was one of two high-profile cases involving employees of a Midland private school earlier this year. The other also happened in February when four Trinity School of Midland officials also were charged with failure to report with intent to conceal, neglect, or abuse. The cases have brought considerable attention to the Midland Police Department and Midland County District Attorney's Office. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton said as much Wednesday in his own statement after the grand jury's decision was made public. He mentioned believing in the men and women in blue and our legal and justice system right here in Midland. He also said, that doesn't mean we won't continue evaluating and taking a good, hard look at why we did what we did, how we can improve and get better as we seek to serve and protect this community. We will continue to assume the best of those who serve us in law enforcement. But we will seek to be even better when we come out the other side of the process. The Midland Municipal Police Officers Association referenced Payton's statement about letting the process work itself out, but stated that following the mayor's words would be difficult based on the actions of prosecutors, again, not having the lead detective testify. Interestingly, Payton also said Wednesday night, if you lose hope in the process, we're losing hope in liberty, and we cannot afford to lose that hope. The mayor didn't have a comment about the Midland Municipal Police Officers Association statement. Midland Municipal Police Officers Association statement. The following is a statement from the Midland Municipal Police Officers Association after the announcement this week that a grand jury did not indict five Midland Christian School officials. MMPOA, Midland Municipal Police Officers Association, has historically been an advocacy organization. Most of our activities are focused on supporting our members as they serve their community. In fact, we cannot recall a single news release or official statement made by this association in at least the past 8 years. The nature of these recent events compels the leadership of MMPOA to release this statement. There have been many who have commented on the facts or merits of this case without being privy to them. MMPOA will not be one of them. MMPOA does advocate for a relentless pursuit of truth, for sound investigations, and for fair and trustworthy processes. To that end, MMPOA has serious concerns about the grand jury process as it was handled by the Midland County District Attorney's Office in this case. It is difficult to let the process work itself out, as Mayor Payton asked of the city, when the Midland County District Attorney's Office does not have the lead detective from the Midland Police Department testify before the grand jury. Such testimonies are commonplace, especially in sensitive, complex, or high-profile cases. Not having the lead detective appear before the grand jury to present the case and answer questions from the grand jury does a disservice to all parties by potentially limiting the grand jury's ability to make a full and fair determination of probable cause. Regardless, we, the members of MMPOA, will continue our efforts to selflessly, tirelessly, and relentlessly and sacrificially serve our city. We are grateful to serve under a city leadership and with fellow citizens who support our efforts to keep our city safe. Midland County District Attorney Nodolf's statement. The following is a statement from Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodolf regarding MCS grand jury trial. The law does not permit the attorney representing the state or any witness to discuss the matters presented or discussed during the grand jury proceedings. Therefore, the Midland County District Attorney's Office cannot legally comment on anything that occurred during the presentation of the case involving the administration coaches from Midland Christian School. In Midland County, a particular grand jury may be presented with 20 to 60 cases at a time. Texas law permits the attorney representing the state, a prosecutor, to appear before the grand jury. When presenting the case, the prosecutor has a duty to present all of the facts, evidence, and any exculpatory information regarding a case. While a detective may be called as a witness in a case, it is not common practice unless there appears that there is a particular need for their testimony. However, even if a prosecutor does not call a witness to testify, the grand jury can still ask that a summons be issued for a witness, including a detective, to appear and answer any questions that the grand jury may have. If this happens, then the Midland County District Attorney's Office does everything it can to ensure that the grand jury has to have all of the facts and evidence they need in order for them to deliberate and vote on a case. Hi, this is Denisa reading the Odessa American opinion page. Our view. Do your research before voting. For those of you who have not yet voted in the ECISD bond election, do some research. Ignore facts before being put out by those who seek to influence your vote with some misinformation. We have provided numerous stories about the bond proposals and numerous letters to the editor and guest viewpoint pieces on the issue. People in favor of and against the bond have spoken out. We are good with that. Healthy debate is always a good thing. Our Facebook page has a healthy back and forth between supporters of the bond and those who hope to see both propositions defeated. To clear up some of those muddy comments and also some poor social media reporting on the issue, here are a few facts. School districts rarely can save enough funds to outright build new facilities without a bond issue. The argument that somehow building a new high school off Faudry Road is a benefit for Midland or for rich kids in the Mission area is simply silliness seeking to pit East versus West here in Odessa. Surely a reasonable person can understand that a new high school built anywhere in Odessa would, of course, alleviate overcrowding at all the other current high schools. That seems pretty simple. Perhaps some who are peddling this crosstown rivalry nonsense have not noted that most of the Parks Bell area is in Ector County. Hundreds of new homes are up and still going up there, not to mention the hundreds of homes popping up in the area around 87th and Loop 338. All of this is in Ector County. Yes, a new high school is also needed in West Odessa. No one disputes that in the group for the bond. All have been upfront about the need for more than one high school. But this bond is about building one new high school on land that was purchased several years ago near Parks Bell. Again, the false argument that a new career and tech center is not needed because only about 400 students are housed at New Tech currently is just a lie. Yes, about 400 students only go to New Tech. However, another 700 to 800 are currently attending classes there for part of their school schedules and then return to either Permian or Odessa High for the rest of their classes. Do you see the pattern? Those who don't support the bond are free to vote against it. But to spread misinformation about the bond issues is both dishonest and sad. Unfortunately, this current smear campaign is being conducted by many of the same folks who spread lies either about candidates in previous elections or about the water treatment plant project last year. Just look at some of the comments peddling conspiracy theories that the rich will just get richer with this bond. It is complete silliness. At the end of the day, we either invest in the future of this city through education or we don't. OHS and Permian are too crowded. It is not the same as it was in the 1970s, as some are claiming. The halls are a nightmare. The aging facilities that would also be brought up to date through the bond issue desperately need the improvements. Sure, there have been some missteps with past bond issues, but a wise person this week asked the question, why can't we have nice things? Well, why can't we? Do your research. Pay attention to the source of the information you read or hear. But most of all, get out and vote. Here's the bond info. Proposition A, a $215,255,000 bond, which would include maintenance and life cycle repairs replacement for school district buildings. $130,255,000. Construction of a new career and technical center, $70 million, which would include classroom and lab space for programs like welding, construction, health science, automation, and process technology, HVAC, plumbing, and others. It would cover an estimated 150,000 square feet and include furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Classroom technology upgrades, $15 million, also would be included. That would feature classrooms and/or campus audio, visual, and multimedia refresh or additions. Proposition B, for $183 million, would go for a new comprehensive high school at UConn and Faudry Roads. The district purchased the 100-acre site about 2 years ago for a little over $2 million. The new high school would be 6A and have a 2,500 to 2,800 student capacity. It would cover an estimated 400,000 square feet and include furniture, fixtures, and equipment. The district website said leaders anticipate the bond will create a tax rate increase of 15 cents and, for a home with a taxable value of $100,000, would equate to a tax increase of approximately $12 per month. There would be no tax increase on residents' homesteads for taxpayers 65 and older, as state law dictates that the tax rate and the amount paid on a residence are frozen when that person turns 65 years old, applies for the exemption, and is approved by the Ector County Appraisal District. ECISD gives local taxpayers a 20% homestead exemption, which is the maximum allowed by law. Early voting ends Tuesday. Election Day is May 7th. Other Voices page. Letters to the editor. Let's grow together. I'm writing this letter to the editor to help everyone to try and envision what Odessa can and will be in future years. We are totally blessed to have the abundance of oil and gas under our Permian Basin, and Odessa is uniquely situated smack dab in the middle of it. We are the base location for tens of thousands of energy services workers that now make Odessa home, and fortunately, many are bringing their children to our community to be educated and contribute to our workforce once they get out of their schooling years. Whether it is ECISD, Odessa College, or UTPB, we need to be able to offer the best environment we can for these kids to get that future education. We will all prosper ahead from these kids learning and then giving back to this community in some way. Like many Ector County voters, I was mystified at sticking the ninth grade students into Permian and Odessa High, and then suddenly we look up and the campuses of both high schools are massively overcrowded. Probably not a smart move at the time, But it has been done, and we all must now figure out the best way to help these kids ahead to not have to deal in that atmosphere of immense congestion. We all can be mad at decisions like that, but it doesn't help now as we need to look to our future. A future because of our abundance of natural resources that looks to be positive and frankly welcomed for the continuing health of our community. This energy service sector will continue to be our major employment segment, but our colleges and health systems are also great diversifications for us when the day comes that those resources will have played out. I went to Dowling Elementary back in the 1960s, and believe me, its footprint hasn't changed all that much since then. These schools are old and dated, and we, as stewards of Odessa, need to commit to those schools always being in updated condition for the kids of our future. And for the $5 per month per $100,000 home evaluation, that's a small price to bring for bringing our schools up to that level. I am asking you today to support the bond proposals that will ensure good quality schools for many decades to come. It is time we do this for the kids. Kirk Edwards, Odessa. Vote yes for the ECISD bond. There are a lot of great community-minded people that have served on the Facilities Committee of the TRE Tax Ratification Election Committee and related committees over the years. And most of these committee members, me included, have been very skeptical of the district's decisions and recent history of less than stellar, terrible performance. More recently, and with the new administration, we would remind them that the district needs to show improvement before we would feel comfortable trying to support more money for the district. We saw some indications of a direction shift toward a better result as we completed the work for the TRE and the community appropriately passed it. Here are some facts providing even more evidence of the changes in direction, which gives me reason to support the ECISD bond proposition A and B. Increase kindergarten readiness by 13%. 40% increase in SAT scores. 15 points higher than the state. Highest graduation rate in 20 years. College career military readiness increased to 63%, which is above the regional score. There is a list of promises made and promises kept from the TRE dollars, and there has been excellent transparency in how those dollars were used. The process included a budget advisory committee, and this administration has agreed to establish and report to a similar advisory committee for the bond dollars. Also, the Odessans for Education PAC, Political Action Committee, has committed to independently communicate to the public how bond dollars are being spent. Good things are happening at ECISD, and I am ready to vote yes for our future. Please join me and vote yes to both Proposition A and B. David Durie, Odessa, Texas. Now is the time to vote yes. As a second-generation Odessan that was educated in ECISD, attending West Side schools, and graduating from OHS, I have always thought Odessa was a great place to raise a family. My kids graduated from PHS. I am troubled by the steady decline of our schools and the quality of education in our community. While growing up, Odessa was known to have some of the best facilities for schools and always equip students to be the best they could be. The community did its best to make sure ECISD gave our students the absolute best chance to succeed in the classroom and in extracurricular activities, regardless of which side of town they were on or which school they attended. Both of our current high schools are over 60 years old, and current enrollment is at about 125% capacity. Additions were added to accommodate the added ninth graders, which resulted in the enrollment increasing to about 4,000 students. We have failed to plan and be prepared for the growth that we have seen during the past 20 to 30 years. This includes the elementary schools and middle schools as well. We have failed in providing the best learning conditions for our students and the best working conditions for our teachers. In fact, we are nearly last in academic performance compared to the rest of the state. This is unacceptable. Although I voted for the bond that passed in 2012, I did not agree with some of the provisions that were presented. I began to ask questions of the school board members as well as administrators. As a result, I was asked to serve on the bond committee in 2016 and again in 2019. Both were made up of a variety of other community members: parents, business leaders, teachers, administrators, retirees, and others. We looked at information from the district and outside sources. We looked at dire needs as well as wants. We tried to identify priorities across the district at every level. We spent 6 to 7 months reviewing this information in order to offer solutions that would best serve the students and teachers of Ector County. Bottom line is that we have more needs and priorities than we have resources. While there were differences in what needed to be done, the consensus was that we need to address the direst issues first. We have to start somewhere, and ultimately the school board made decisions based on the recommendations from the committee. There is a lot of misinformation being told by people that have not stepped foot on any school campus or even attended a school board meeting. I would like to encourage everyone to attend one of the informational meetings and ask questions before making a decision that will have long-lasting effects on the quality of education for the kids of Ector County. We can no longer say shoulda, coulda, woulda and blame past school boards and superintendents for our failure in education. We can't point fingers at the other side of town claiming that one side gets preferential treatment. We are all in this together. What benefits one will benefit the others. We are all to blame for not holding administrators accountable and demanding that our schools be better. We should have been attending board meetings and talking to our elected officials, but we did not. I believe that is our obligation to the kids of Ector County to provide the best education possible. Our future depends on it. While these proposals may not be exactly what you may want, we must start rebuilding now for our future. Please vote yes for both propositions on May 7th. Grayson Hankins, Odessa. Move out of the comfort box. The Sunday letter from Tim Tumanowski a couple weeks ago shed daylight on the usual predictable self-serving methods our ECISD employs to dig deeper into the taxpayers' nearly empty pockets. The district, like the city and county, should be fat with cash due to the tax base expansion during the past 20-plus year surge in home and apartment building construction. They will not think outside the box they are comforted in. Before the last bond that funded the expansion, we're still on the hook for, I offered solutions. They were obviously ignored. Well, here it is again. Return to the six-period schedule. Open at least one high school for night school classes. Pay those teachers an additional enhancement to teach a period or two at night. Hire some former retired teachers for night positions. There are many students who have difficult time working and attending day school. Many are among the dropouts we lose to that schedule conflict. Night school would be a student benefit, an effective use of existing facilities, and could well be afforded within a streamlined budget without a bond. Restructure the administration manning positions in ECISD to improve the management of the district. Contract out in-district maintenance to improve maintenance and reduce taxpayer cost. Our city businesses can employ any qualified district maintenance personnel as they compete for that maintenance service. Sell off all those district facilities, inventories, and vehicles used for those maintenance functions. Doug Moss, Odessa. Hi, this is Denise Casey, reading the etc. section of the Odessa American for Saturday, April 30th, 2022. Lifestyle changes may reduce need for statin. Dear Dr. Roach, would you comment on some information I discovered about statin drugs, which I think reveals some nefarious numbers on behalf of the drug companies? So far, I have found two reports that say the actual number of people who have heart attacks after being placed on Lipitor was reduced from 3.1% to 2%. This was a study of thousands of people over 10 years and was done by the drug company, not an independent lab. The drug company selling the statin drug claims that a reduction from 3% to 2% is a 33% drop. I beg to differ on that. If my chances of having a heart attack drop from 3% to 1%, I say that is a 1% drop. So I quit taking the drug because of the long-term side effects. I also changed my diet to eliminate sugars and highly refined carbs, and I'm eating a lot of dark green veggies. I keep my weight under 140 pounds, which is still a few pounds over my natural weight, about 135 pounds. I am 5 feet 9 inches and have always been very thin. I had a heart attack and triple bypass 11 years ago, even though my blood pressure was 125 over 80. My current cardiologist wants to up my statin drug from 40 milligrams to 80 milligrams. I am 78 years old and very healthy. Anon. Answer. An old expression is that there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damn lies, and statistics. What you are calling nefarious, the drug company calls marketing, and both ways of looking at it are true, as long as you understand what is being said. The original study that looked at the effect of a statin drug in people with heart disease showed that after 5.4 years, the risk of dying was 12% in the group randomly assigned to statin and 8% in the group randomly assigned to placebo. The paper called that a 45% relative risk reduction, but I would call it a 4% absolute reduction. Other studies, there have been many, and that have consistently shown benefit, did not show as great an improvement. 33% relative risk reduction is more common than 45%. But you have to look at both the length of time a study goes on and how sick the subjects in the studies are.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.